This is the 20th season of Bass Talk Live. BTL is presented by Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFTCO, Pro Guide Batteries, Spro, Gamakatsu, The Bass Tank, Denali Rods, Beatdown Outdoors, and Sunline.
BTL coming at you.
Good morning and welcome to another exciting edition of BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk about bass fishing. Another thrilling and exciting week in the world of professional bass fishing. Man, they just keep racking out mega weights. This is the year of the mega weights. We've had 130 pounds, which is the second heaviest Elite Series tournament win ever this year, with what happened with Trey McKinney on Lake Fork, and then the last Elite on Harris Chain, actually two ago, because they went back to back, was a little bit down, and then it comes back and they're like, oh, they're only going to get 2 days of practice on the St. John's. Fishery's a little bit different, the fish aren't really on the beds, this one's going to be kind of all over the map. And then Corey Johnson, 93-6, wins by 21 pounds, gets his long overdue first Elite Series title. And we're going to get right into our guest today because he has some important things to take care of. So he's only got about a half hour with us. We'll dive into this in the second half of the show. But I do want to point out that since 2020, there have been six Canadians that have now won on either the Open, the Elite Series, or the Classic level, starting with Chris Johnston's win on the St. Lawrence River in 2020, then Gussie won on the Tennessee River in 21, then Corey Johnson won an Open on Thousand Islands in 21, then Cooper Gallant won the Bassmaster Open on Cherokee in 22, then Gussie wins the Classic in 23, then Corey Johnson just wins on the St. John's River in 24, and they're going up north, and there's three Canadians in the two Johnson brothers and Cooper who are going to have a shot at the Angler of the Year in 2024. So it is a good time to be a Canadian tournament bass angler. Let's get to today's guest live from Memphis, Tennessee. And he's getting back into the tournament game, folks. If you follow BTL, if you followed his journey, you know it has been a wild and testing past 3-4 months for Miles Berghoff and the Berghoff family. And we've had him on regularly, and he's back. Miles, thanks for joining us from St. Jude.
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
I'm about ready to move up to Canada, dude.
I was just going to say, I'd love to see a breakdown of like the winners between states. You know, could it be that Canada is getting more wins than any one person or any one state in the U.S.?
That would be wild to see, like, over the past, and you could break it down to kind of suit whatever,
right? Yeah.
Act that you want to do, but it would be interesting to see if, like, oh, more Canadians have won than Texans or Alabamans or Florida, you know, to traditional, right, what you would think of tournament fishing.
What always got me about Canada is that I didn't realize how versatile you could be just fishing Canada, but you can. I mean, these guys are going obviously down to Florida, you know, and crushing it down there and everywhere in between. Actually, Florida doesn't surprise me as much as some of the other states, because Florida has a lot of those natural lakes that I think would be pretty similar to what you'd see up north. But, like, I don't know, man, those Canadians.
It is the thing that is interesting, though, is five out of those six wins were, you know, two were on the St. Lawrence River with Chris Johnson in 2020 and then Corey in 21 in the Open. So that's understandable. I'm shocked, right, it took that long for them to get the wins. But you look at what Cooper did on Cherokee and then the two wins by Gussie on the Tennessee River, and Corey's blowout win this past week was the first largemouth tournament that a Canadian has, right, won. The other five were, right, smallmouth, even though, you know, the other two were in Tennessee, and you talk about how they're a different strain than the northern fisheries, but man, those guys, like, get it.
Yeah, they totally do. They're very versatile, no doubt.
All right, I talked with you. I said you were like, man, I'm going to tow my boat. I'm going to get it on the water. And I said, why don't you come on, give us a little bit of an update on what's going on with the Berghoff family, with Riley at St. Jude. And then it's probably been a while since you've been on a show and talked about fishing. So I have noticed on your YouTube channel that you have been slaughtering them every time you hit the lake. So let's get let's kick things off with the update. How are you doing, the Berghoff family, Riley with St. Jude?
So we're doing great over here, you know, considering. And you know, Riley just started her fourth cycle of chemo on Thursday, and that one was, I'll be honest, it was kind of like every once in a while we kind of get kicked in the gut a little bit, and it's just like, okay, this isn't going to be as easy as like it feels right now. So it always seems like it kicks up another level. And she had three different chemos that she had to do that first day, and it hit her kind of hard. You know, she could just tell she was pretty pale and just, you know, just not feeling good. But now she is, you know, her color's back, and she's like, she's just running around like crazy. So, she's doing really, really well. You know, we're really worried that just after that first day of chemo, it would just go downhill from there, but she's really just bounced back. You know, getting three different chemotherapy drugs, you know, at the same time has got to be just brutal. So, so she's doing really, really well. And the last imaging that we got, after the second cycle of chemo, before the third, we got some MRI and PET scan done, and some imaging done, and the imaging showed, we didn't get like a percentage, but it was huge progress, like huge shrinkage of the cancer, in as far as like the primary tumor and what's in her bones and bone marrow. So we're very, very hopeful, and we've got another round of like tests and stuff like that after this fourth cycle. So we're moving in the right direction, and obviously we can't be more grateful for St. Jude's, man. They've just been incredible during this process. But Riley is doing really good, and so that makes it way easier for you know, both Katie and I too. So yeah, but yeah,
I know we're talking years long process here. But yeah, this is the first time that I've had you on since all this has gone down, where it feels like you're actually like able to breathe and take a deep breath and are in a little bit of a routine now. Because I haven't, you know, I mean, I don't see you in person except when we're on the show or on the show. But dude, you like look great, and it sounds and feels like you're kind of in a little bit of a routine now.
Yeah, it feels that way. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much exactly what's going on, is that we have found our routine. You know, once we got placed in the target house here, which for those of you at home that don't know how the housing works for St. Jude, they've got several different housing units. You've got Target House, you've got Domino's Village, and Ronald McDonald House, as well as Tri-Delta. Those are all places that they could put you for long-term or short-term housing. And so once we got into long-term housing, we could kind of get into our own routine. You know, we had a kitchen, and we've got all that stuff that we need to kind of get into that, you know, get into the swing of things. And so, you know, like right now, as we speak, we've got some nurses that just walked in. I can hear them, and they're taking Riley's labs. So it is really just every week is pretty much the same routine. We know which days we're supposed to be going to the hospital. Like today, we're going to go to the hospital in a little bit to get her labs reviewed and all that stuff. And then also, because we know what our schedule is, I am, like you said, able to get out a little bit, which has been excellent. You know, I've got some wonderful sponsors that would support me throughout the year, regardless of what I was able to do, but to be able to get out and like do some content on YouTube and stuff like that, that has been, you know, very helpful for, you know, maintaining my sanity, I guess.
Okay. How have you been able to get out? Because if you follow your YouTube channel here, I'll pull it up right now. We're talking, as much as I hate to say it, Carolina rig fish, topwater fish, conning fish, chatterbait fish, all sorts of stuff. And I had called you like a month ago, and I was like, how did you have all this content in the can, Miles? And you're like, dude, I don't, like, this is my job. This is what I do. This is important. Yeah. And I get to go fishing and catch fish. So how is this happening? Like, cause I wouldn't have thought, like, oh, you're in Memphis, but it seems like you're catching more fish than you've ever caught before.
Yeah. It kind of feels like cheating. So, I am super, super thankful to, a couple people out here. Mark Rose, actually, I contacted him to see if there's anybody in the area that he knows that I can keep my boat at. And he's just like, throw it in my garage. He cleared out the whole portion of his garage for me to keep my boat. So I can go over there anytime I want and grab the boat. But he also got me access to a friend's lake. It's like a 200-acre lake. And so I get to go out there and just pretty much be by myself and catch all these bass. It's pretty incredible. It's awesome because it allows me, I only get maybe 1 or 2 days a week if everything's going perfect, right? You know, if something happens with Riley, her numbers are down and it's all hands on deck, fishing is definitely not a priority in that scenario. But if I do get to get out my 1 or 2 days a week, it's like so easy for me to get all the content I need because I'm doing a video a day, on YouTube. That's my goal, is to maintain that video a day, which obviously is helping my sponsors, and it's just helping me, you know, just kind of stay fresh in the business a little bit. But yeah, it is a little bit of a stock pond situation. I'm not going to lie. It's not like,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's definitely nothing wrong with that. And I'm very thankful for Mark and all those guys, that all the property owners that own that lake. So
are they like, they get on the beds there? Like, have you been able to sight fish them there, or is it?
You know, I kind of missed the sight fishing deal. Like, I went out there this last week and the bluegill were already starting to bed like heavy.
I gotcha.
But I got such a great pre-spawn bite going. And then the crazy thing was, like, you'd expect to be able to go catch them on everything. But if they don't want a technique, they're not going to eat it. Like, it's still like, you can still, figure out. Obviously it's broader as far as like what they will eat, but if it's something they don't want at all, they're still not going to eat it. So it's not like I can go out there and throw just anything. You still have to actually fish for those fish. There's just more of them and they're less pressured overall.
So ardent listeners of BTL know that I talk ad nauseum. I don't know if that's the right word. I talk frequently about the Dick Hiley St. Jude Bass Classic, more so because it was postponed because of high water last year. So it happened in September, October, and then it's usually the first week of May. So we've really had it two in the last 6 months. I know the BTL and St. Jude combo shirts that go to raise money for this. We are over $3,000. I'm getting the final numbers exactly this week and we'll show it. But that tournament takes place the first weekend in May, the 3rd, 4th, and 5th up in Wabasha, Minnesota. And that was not even on your radar, I would say, a month ago, 2 months ago, as far as when you would get to fish, travel, go. But you're signed up for the tournament. You're towing your rig up there, and you're going to be part of that event in their 26th season of the Dick Hiley St. Jude Bass Classic. Look at that smile on your face. You got to be pumped that you're going to get to fish a derb.
I get to fish a tournament. Oh, I'm so excited. So I had told me about it and all that stuff, and I kind of didn't really take anything seriously or really think about it until about a month ago, or, a couple weeks ago, really. And finally, I'm like, I got to sign up. I got to stop postponing things, because I find that I'm postponing things and just kind of not doing things on time if I just don't jump into it during this whole process. But yeah, I signed up for it. My buddy Scott and I, and Scott is actually Scott Kinninger. He's one of the Matt Steffen household. He's Matt Steffen's brother-in-law. So we're going to go out and actually go fish that. And originally we were just going to fish out of his boat, and he was having you know, a little bit of electrical issues, and it, which I'm sure that it could have got fixed. But I was like, you know, it made me think. I already had my flight in my my rental car, but I was like, man, I need to just cancel all that and just drag my boat up there, you know, because getting a good road trip just sounds lovely right now. You know, so yeah, so I'm going to be driving up, and I might get a half day of practice if they let you practice on Friday, but I might not even get any practice. Okay. Yeah, I might. Who knows? It is a 12-hour drive, so it's a little lengthy. If anything happens on that drive, I might not make practice, but I'm excited. Oh,
you got forward facing sonar though, right? So you don't need any practice. You just get out in the river and just drop it down and just wait till they swim past in that main river current. Just throw a minnow at them, you're good.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a good sign though that you're excited about fishing or thinking about it, because I know fishing for a lot of people, it we're in a different boat, because you know, I do a show about it every single day. The industry is how I make my living. I fish the opens on the side. You're a tournament angler by trade. That's how you support your family, have supported it with it. But there's also a lot of perspective here. And I know talking to you that, you know, fishing hasn't been on the forefront, but are you able to, with the stage you're in now, a little bit of therapeutic for you, or a little bit of, oh my gosh, there's a desire to get back on the water a little bit because of everything that's happened? Or just talk about that dynamic, because I know fishing is different for everyone. Some people use it as a getaway. Some people use it to put things off that they're supposed to be doing. It's a whole bunch of different variety.
Yeah, you know what? I will be completely brutally honest here. During this process, the main thing that's kind of come from it is like how much I enjoy just being home, you know, with my family. You know, I love tournament fishing so much. It's been my life, you know, since high school, right? It's been my only sole focus in life. I've had such a great time, you know, building skills and things like that, and you know, climbing the ladder in tournament fishing. And I want to get back to that for sure. But honestly, I don't think about it all that much. I think about providing for my sponsors, the people that are still, you know, paying me. And that's why the YouTube thing is such a big deal. Like, I don't even really get out, quote unquote, fun fishing as much. I'm out there for a purpose to do some great content. But as far as like tournament fishing, I've been watching some, you know what? It was crazy. I started watching, I'm not a golf guy. I've never really played a full round of golf in my life, but I watched that like Live, or what was it? Not Live, that Full Swing. You ever watched that on, oh dude,
I just did a whole show on Full Swing.
So many parallels to bass fishing. And that actually got me more excited than anything in getting me jonesing to get out there on the water and tournament fish and compete. So there is a part of me that's like below the surface, but it's kind of, you know, right now my focus is so, I'm just so focused on Riley and my wife during this process. I really haven't been thinking as much about tournament fishing as a lot of people would say. I know that sounds bad, but I miss tournament fishing, but man, it has been so awesome to be able to spend time with my family during this. I almost feel like this has been a true gift. As long as everything works out in the long run for Riley, like this has been a real gift to be able to realize and recognize like how time at home with my family is so important. And so, you know, that's kind of how I'm treating it as. Maybe it's a coping mechanism. I don't know what it is, because I certainly do miss tournament fishing. When I watch, I can't hardly watch tournament fishing live, because I'm like, oh my gosh, just when people are calling fish. Dude, it's amazing. Just the act of culling, I'm like, oh my gosh, just sliding a 3.5-pounder in the live well would be so nice right now. It's
oh, you're gonna get to do that, because that's those fish up there. It's a six fish limit up there, but you got the largemouth and the smallmouth up there at Wabasha. But so 4 days ago I had Gleason on, and the title of it on BTL is Bass Fishing and the Masters. And we went on like a 45-minute tangent on how bass fishing is the perfect conduit, especially right now with what's going on and all the different back storylines for a professional, independent docu-series team to come in, because it's not like Netflix sends someone to do it. You have like a team of professionals that come in. This is what they do. They do it. Then they either sell it to Netflix or they take, you know, do advertising for it on that. But a professional, like a Full Swing production with the professional fish, right. There are so many dang parallels. It's unbelievable.
Oh my gosh. It's wild. It really is wild. I was listening to the, cause I got off my like 2 years before this all happened. Like the end of last year, I told you this before, I felt normal. I felt back again. Like I was ready to just go crush it. But 2 years before that, you know, 2022 and 2023 were terrible tournament fishing years, the worst I've ever had. I was kind of in a slump, and then I felt like I got out of that. And I'm watching these guys, I forget which golfers they are, but like a lot of the episodes focus on, you know, those you know, competitors that are kind of in that lull and like what they're going through. Like, and I was like, I literally can feel what he's feeling, you know. And also on the other side too, you know, when you're playing good, when you're fishing good, there's just so many things that are very similar with golf and fishing. It's crazy.
Speaking of fishing good, so you're going up to, I think it's what, pools 4 and 5 or pools 5 and 6 on the Mississippi River, the first week of May. I've always struggled with river fisheries. Current-driven fisheries. It's always been difficult for me. Talk about how you plan on breaking down a difficult fishery, specifically if you have anything like on a current-driven fishery, to where you put your boat in and need to find fish fast. Like,
right?
Are there any like laws, rules, kind of rules of thumb that you go by on rivers to locate fish early and quickly this time of year?
No, I treat, because I don't, you know, as much experience as I have now on the Tennessee River, I don't know how much of that always translates over to something like the Mississippi River. It doesn't seem like it always does to me. Yeah, obviously the fish relate to the current fairly similar or the same, but I'm going to treat this like any other tournament, and I'm really going to just simplify it and dumb it down and go to areas that I recognize. Even if I haven't been there, they just feel like something that I'd like to fish. The great thing is that time period, there's going to be some fish, you know, in and around the spawning phase, right? So I can find some areas that are out of the current and focus on those. And that's kind of my goal. I've picked out a couple on Google Earth that I'm like, yeah, these are legit to have a mixture of a lot of different things. And that's what I look for a lot of different times going to a new lake, is I look for a area that represents so many different types of cover and structure. So I can pick apart that cover and structure in that area and maybe, you know, broaden everything and start checking out some more areas once I figure out what they're holding on. But like there's a certain areas that I've got picked out that I want to practice that have a lot of docks. They've got a lot of riprap, so a lot of man-made, you know, structure, lots of, you know, oxbows and backwaters, and that also have large flats too. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to find a combination of all those different ingredients. That way, hopefully, you know, I can figure out what they're holding on at that time. But, you know, that during May, you should be able to find some smallmouth or largemouth spawning. So hard cover that's out of the current is kind of, you know, what I have on my mind. But that's likely going to change once we get up there.
So one of the things that I found, I think this was my second or third year fishing it, is there's a couple guys on that stretch of river, and I'm learning on all stretches, like that don't miss on rivers. They never miss. It doesn't matter whether the water's high, whether it's the fall, whether it's the spring, whether it's spawning, regardless. But I mean, there's a couple dudes who fish this tournament who will come in with 6 for 23 for 21 to 25 pounds, and they've done it for the last 15 to 20 years. They're the guys to beat. They're always in the top 5. it's insane. Is there more of a home field advantage than a river system, or in the fishing world, in your opinion, is an intricate river system the biggest home field advantage in tournament fishing?
I think that it's one of the biggest. I don't know if it's the biggest, but it is 100% one of the biggest, because the river fish, man, they are so susceptible to so many different variables, you know, throughout the year. And if you aren't well versed in how to react to each of those variables, you know, you're going to have a hard time adjusting. And so I do think that guys that like river rats, guys that are constantly out on that river, they have a distinct advantage. And, you know, really, that doesn't bother me at all. Cause like, I'm not even really getting a good, honest practice in. So I'm just more or less worried about not wrecking my boat and putting it on a wing dam. Right. So, you know, I'm treating this tournament as a good exercise and like just showing up and trying to figure it out as fast as possible. So like competing against those guys, I don't even know if that's on the, you know, that's really on the radar, you know, as much as just getting up there and doing the best that I possibly can. But there are some hammers up there that, like you said, they do not miss.
It seems like every river, like in your, so we talk about it on the Arkansas River too, specifically out of Three Forks, out of the Arkansas right. River pool there, and then going down into Kerr. I wonder what would you define you call a guy a river rat? You hear that term a ton in fishing. Right. What is your definition of a river rat?
Oh gosh, it's just somebody that just lives out there on the river. You know, it's just constantly fishing the river and really exploring, you know, those river systems. You know, they're not just in one pool. That's not a river rat. You got guys that are, you know, if you're down in La Crosse, you're exploring 7, 8, and 9. You're really know what's going on at all times and really know the landscape. That's kind of what I think of as a guy that's a river rat. Just, and maybe it's a group of guys, you know, a lot of times it is a group of guys that know it seems like more so than regular like reservoirs, river fisheries just have attract groups of anglers that kind of pull their knowledge together to kind of, you know, figure out a fishery. That's kind of what I've experienced. You know, you've got like Chris Groh, he considers himself a river rat. And you know, there's a bunch of guys up there that they just live on that river and just go up and down into the different pools and everything. So that's, I don't know. That's my explanation.
Cause I made a list. So I think if, when I think of river rat, I think of a guy with multiple boats in his backyard.
Ooh, yeah.
Think of a guy who's got if he needs to make a run, two pools, has the glitter rocket, the sparkly right. fiberglass that mm-hmm. he can lock through and make the run, but also has either the jet drive or one that he can plow into backwaters. I think of a guy who's like a little rough around the edges. Like he's not you know what I mean? Like he doesn't care that he's got a mud line on his boat, or like the rods stay on the front deck for weeks or months at a time. He's not a guy who changes out his line every single day. You know what I mean? Like that, when I think of river rats, I think a guy who can grind out a 12 pound limit and be like just as happy as the guy who catches a 30 pound sack. I mean, that's what I think of when I think of river rat.
Yeah. So I think of somebody that could definitely knows where to hide things if they had to.
Yeah. And someone who has good stories. Have you ever met a river rat who doesn't have good stories? Because rats have gotten stuck, sunk something, gotten into somewhere where they shouldn't have.
Had to camp.
Yeah. Like you get around river rats and they start telling story. Well, one time, you know, when the water got, they end up in the craziest places.
That's true.
And most of them are generational. If you think about it, most of them are, you know, oh, my dad fished this river, or I had an uncle that taught me on this river. We grew up next to, like, most of it's hard to become a river rat. I think you're born into that scenario.
I agree. It's a very unique group of anglers. That's for sure.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. I know you guys have to get over for your routine.
Yeah.
weekday activities. A couple things. Hopefully, I will see you on the 4th and 5th in Wabasha. I don't know what best case. So I'm flying out Friday after the Open on
Logan. You mean Martin. Saturday?
No, Saturday. If I miss the cut, and I'm a statistics guy, Miles, so I'm just looking at my statistics. So statistically, I have a pretty high chance of missing the cut. However, it is spotted bass, and it is a post-spot deal. So there's a chance there. If I don't, then I won't be able to make it. Adam has to have a guy who jumps in. Otherwise, I got a flight out Friday that gets there early Saturday. I'll fish Saturday, Sunday, and I'll see you Saturday at takeoff in Wabasha. Second is, and I do want to mention this, there is a direct link, and I know we've asked you guys for donations for the Berghoff family, for the St. Jude t-shirts, for all sorts of stuff. One last thing, if you guys wanted to donate, you didn't get a t-shirt, you haven't had an opportunity, here's the last chance since Miles signed up last late for this tournament. There is a direct link to his St. Jude team. So all this money goes directly to his team, and then the takeoff number is based on how much money you've raised. So right now we got you, Miles. We're taking off ahead of you, Bart and I.
Yep.
Don't follow us.
Where are you at?
We're right at 20,000 right now, I believe.
Oh,
like within, amazing. And I have a couple guys that I've got to be hey, if we're a couple hundred short to jump in. Yeah, I'm super proud of that. And that is all Crappie Chronicles and BTL supporters. It could not be more proud to do 20K, especially after asking for money in October. So, but there's a direct link in that. If you want to jump in, you can see like all the donators there. That goes directly to Miles's team for the Dick Hiley St. Jude Bass Classic.
Yeah, so, it doesn't go to us. It goes
No. That's 100% goes to St. Jude. The same place that everybody who raises money for this event goes to. That's how they raised $1.1 million last year and over $7 million total over the past 25 years. So
I really wish I understood how it all worked before. I honestly didn't even think that. I had no idea that that teams raised the donations for St. Jude for this. But it's amazing the way that they've set this up. And so I'd love some more help to raise as much money as possible for St. Jude, because they're performing miracles every single day. And this next year, from here on out, I'm going to be starting the fundraising efforts much, much earlier. We literally just started like a week and a half ago. So, hopefully we can get up to, I'm hoping 10 grand is in our future for St. Jude at least.
That should give you a top half takeoff.
Yeah.
There's some teams that are just ridiculous. They're like 40, 50K.
I saw that the other day. I was like, gosh,
dude, man. It was good chatting fishing with you a little bit.
Yeah, good chatting fishing with you too. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit rusty chatting about fishing, but it felt pretty good.
You think you'll have a little adrenaline pumping when that first either 4.5 pounds largemouth smokes a frog or smallmouth eats a plug or a jig in the Derby?
Dude, I know I will. I know I will. Just driving up there. Just driving up there with the boat in tow is going to be plenty. I mean, you really think about it. It's such a dramatic change in my life that's just, taking place. And just, and really, it's only been 2 months, right? 2.5 months.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. It feels like it's half a year already. I've done nothing but tournament fish for so long, and to have it slow down to just a screeching halt like this is super weird. But going and fishing this tournament is something I'm really, really looking forward to, and not just getting on the water, but just the whole process.
You got the corgi up in your neck of the woods yet?
No, he's unfortunately, Doppler's still got to live over in he's actually at some friend's house on Watts Bar. So he's living his best life, eating, goose poop and chasing squirrels. So
I gotcha. Yeah, no, you'll have the adrenaline go. Like I've said before, there's a dude who stands on the rocks. Like you idle under a little bridge, and there's like all this stuff in the morning, and they're helping you back in, and it's cool. And then there's this dude who's done it every one, and like you idle out, and he goes, and you get past him, he goes, go. And then really? Boom, you take out. Cool. Yo, dude, it's cool. You'll see it. You'll have to. It gives me goosebumps every year. I've done it. Like, that's his thing. It's like very dramatic and stuff. So he'll be on the right hand side as you idle out into the main river. So do not miss that shot. That's the coolest shot of the whole tournament.
That is so cool. Yeah, I'll definitely hit that.
So, all right, Miles, thanks for jumping on.
All right. Thank you very much, Matt. Appreciate you. Thank you, everybody. Hit that link if you get an opportunity. $10, even if it's $20, anything helps.
$10, $5, $20, whatever. It's also tax deductible, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. See you, brother. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That is Miles Berghoff back in the tournament fishing scene, but also still combining. It is hard to believe that that's only been a couple months, but up at St. Jude with the family as his like 1-year-old daughter goes through cancer. But seems to be on a very steady and positive path. So we got a bunch of derbies that went down this past week. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive into those derbies we have, or tournaments. There's still some people that don't like when I call them derbies. I just have gotten used to it. It's a tournament competition, professional high-level competition. We had the One Bass Clear Lake Open. We had an MLF Invitational on Kentucky Lake. And we had the Bassmaster Elite Series on the St. John's River. I have a couple guys who did a lot of good for themselves heading forward. Some surprising stats. One of them may be from an Oklahoman who really bumped his game up over the past 2 weeks with the back-to-back Florida events. We have a really cool winner of the Clear Lake One Bass Open and a smallmouth fest that went down at the MLF Invitational on Kentucky Lake. It's BTL on a Monday, April 22nd. We'll be back right after this.
The new Puma STS has been redesigned from the ground up. With the angler, design, function, and performance in mind, nothing on this new offering was compromised, and the only thing carried over from the previous version is the name. Based on the Soft Touch series hull that started with the flagship Jaguar, this new model is nimble and performs incredibly well at all speeds with either a 250 or 300 horsepower engine. Featuring a new 96-inch wide body footprint, this hull measures out at 20'7" in length. Industry-leading design coupled with tournament-winning performance. The Puma STS from Basscat. Feel the rush.
Gamakatsu, the innovation leader in fish hooks, is launching Nano Alpha technology in 2024. Nano Alpha is a new finish available on Gamakatsu's most popular hook styles. It delivers 2 times slicker performance, 4 times better corrosion resistance. Nano Alpha technology makes the world's greatest fish hooks even better in 2024 to help anglers catch more fish.
Born in Japan, using technology, innovation, and precision, Sunline produces the widest selection of fishing lines at the most technologically advanced line factory in the world. Manufactured at the strictest tolerances to produce victories at the highest levels of tournament bass fishing. From household names like Christie, Swindle, and Cruz, to young guns like Cook, Logan, New, and Welcher, they all trust Sunline to take them to the top of the leaderboard. Choose the line that will give you the strength to guarantee your confidence. Sunline.
It's definitely a lot colder today.
Man, I really need to make this cut.
I need to make up points quick.
Positive mental attitude.
I hope they stay where I found them.
Are they even pulling water?
Too far. And I hope nobody else.
Man, that's too windy.
The water's too high.
Avco, keeping you comfortable on the outside, no matter how you're feeling on the inside.
Everything you need, one legendary brand. Time on our Strike King.
Your early morning mentality is your every hour mentality. All gas, no brakes. Focus, purpose, power. destined for the water, but confident everywhere else. A calming buzz before the storm, the truth of nature itself. You can't catch lightning in a bottle. There's a limit out there, but it's not with your gear. Unrelenting power delivery. Unparalleled weight savings. Keeping you on the water, whether you run a 9.9 or out scoping your best 5. In this rare air, there's power in the silence. It's a mindset, thinking only of the things that matter and freeing your mind from the things that you trust.
Get the best patterns backed by tournament data. Start by finding the best 10% of your lake. Know exactly what to look for and what to throw. After that, you just put them in the boat. Try the Deep Dive app today.
Look at that beast right there.
All right, welcome back, BTL, on a Monday. A lot of derbies that went on this past week. I kind of ran that down before the break. Let's start. Let's start on the West Coast, and then we'll work to the East Coast because we had winners all the way from Clear Lake in California to the St. John's River in Florida and everywhere in between. Austin Bonjour wins the one bass Clear Lake Open. Really good turnout for these tournaments. You know, the entire field fishes all 3 days with a AAA angler in the back of their boat. It is a shared weight format. So like if your co-angler catches a 6-pounder, it counts towards your best 5. And then if you catch a 6-pounder, it counts towards your co-anglers. And then the co-angler has 3 different pros and you have 3 different co-anglers. Kind of works out to where you're not like, you have no reason to backboat your AAA. They call it AAA instead of a co because you want them to catch fish. It all works out in the wash. The same guys who, you know, the guys who really catch them out there. And it was also another slugfest there. 83-28. Austin went 33-84, 25-41, and 24-03, 83-28 to win that event. I know there's been a lot of stuff that's gone on with leagues and trails and getting paid and not getting paid and payouts with stuff that's going on the West Coast. Good to see Austin get the win there. I have reached out to him. He does listen to BTL, I believe. And he's all in on jumping on BTL to talk about how he got the job done on Clear Lake. And anytime a guy catches almost a 34-pound bag, it's worth having on. But, you know, we're dealing with some time differences in there. So this week, the goal is to get Austin on the show to talk about that big win out at Clear Lake. Also, a shout out to the Birdman, Kurt Dove, who took a little bit of a leap of faith, and he's fishing all 4 of the one bass opens or series that they had on the West Coast. Billy's done a really good job of promoting, publicizing the payouts, the incentives for that. And then if you also remember, one of the cool things that happened with One Bass that was announced either at the end of last year or beginning of this year was they partnered with Bassmaster, and the top 5 anglers in each of these One Bass opens earn a ticket directly into the Bass Nation National Championship, which there's a big change in format that went down this year, but that is for the 25 championship because of double qualifiers. Kurt Dove, who do his youth camp every year and has been on BTL many times, went 1954, 32-44 in 1986. He finished 6th, but I think there was a double qualifier. One of the guys turned down the invite, so the Birdman punches his ticket to the 2025 Bass Nation Championship. He is just 3 days away then from either winning that and getting back on the Elite Series for a 3rd time, should he choose that. I don't know if he even wants it. He's got a pretty good gig going what he's doing now. Or making the Bassmaster Classic as one of the top 3 finishers. So also Ish Monroe, who I do the Open Pros Pick'em with Andrew Upshaw and Todd Castledine. Every Elite Series tournament, he finished 3rd in that event, 77-47. And he had a 32-pound bag on the final day to jump all the way up into 3rd. So a lot of good stuff going on out west with One Bass and their tournaments. I would love to jump in and fish those tournaments. I know they got one coming up on Mead They have the U.S. Open coming up in October, also on Mojave. They're just like right after back-to-back Bassmaster Open. So as soon as there's a week that I can go out west and jump in one of those, I'm all about it. All right, let's head a little bit more east to the MLF Invitational that took place on Kentucky Lake. Now, I don't know this guy very well, but I have watched his stuff. I do know that he grinds and has been grinding for a long time on the YouTube and the tournament scene. But Andrew Nordby wins that tournament 63-5. If you take into account Milliken's Open win and Nordby's win here, these are guys that I would, and I think they would admit, are YouTube guys who obviously also fish tournaments, but are competing against incredibly high level of talent and winning. So congratulations to Andrew Nordby, 63-5. A lot of smallmouth weighed in this event. You have to remember that's a three-day tournament over on the Invitationals, not a four-day tournament. So a little bit over 20 pounds a day. Heavily dominated by smallmouth. Also, the college event that went down just before that was primarily a smallmouth beatdown. There were a lot of low 20 bags of smallmouth weighed in that college event with the Bassmaster College event with two anglers. Shout out to my buddy Adam Bartuzek, who I am fishing that Dick Hiley St. Jude Bass Classic with. He finished 14th. Now, this was a ballsy move. I haven't talked about this on the show yet, but I will talk about it because, quite frankly, I thought it was a bad idea. I thought it was a great way to give back money because the payouts on the Invitationals are not fantastic. I think it's top 30 get 10 grand, and then the next 20 get like 8 grand. It's over a $5,000 entry fee. You finish 11th, you only get 10 grand. There's not, but it still pays out well. So here's what happened. So last year, Bart fishes the Toyota series there, finds a unique pattern, maximizes it, gets a second place finish. So with the Invitationals not filling up, they allowed guys to jackpot them this year to get to that 150 boat max. So Bart rolls over the money he gets from the second, dumps over 5K in entry fees into a one-off Invitational entry fee, spends a couple grand to get there. So he's like 7 grand in on this thing, banking that it's on the same lake where he caught him the year before and that he's going to be able to run the same pattern and cash in on it. And I'm like, dude, that's risky, man. Like, you're going to give back all the money that you won. It's a one-off. You're not fishing for the points. You're already invested 7K in it. So he goes out and ends up making the cut, has almost a 20 pound bag on the second day, catches a 5-pounder, ends up finishing 14th, $10,000 check, cashes money, $10,000. Quite frankly, I don't think I'd have had the balls to do that. But shout out to Bart. He was able to kind of use the same thing that he did last year. He had to tweak it a little bit. There was some more pressure on his stuff. I talked to him yesterday, but that was a big league move in his first and only Invitational that he's going to fish this year. But he gets the 10K check on that. Also, let me see if I wrote this down. Yeah, Drew Gill is insanely good. He finished 10th in this tournament, which was another top 10. And we just got done last week talking about how Jacob Wheeler has 8 consecutive top 10 finishes at the professional level. So he finishes 10th. So far in his life, this is Drew Gill's life, he has fished 12 events between the Invitationals last year and this year and the BPT. This year, he has 8 top 10s out of those 12 events, and he's like 21 years old. 8 out of 12. Like, there's guys who fish their entire careers over at MLF or FLW who have made a good living doing this for more than a decade who don't have 8 top 10s to their name. That's highly impressive. And the other thing that I find impressive about Drew Gill is if you've listened to the podcast tour that he's been on, and including BTL, he like literally gives his game plan up to everybody. He likes like, here's how I do it. Here's how I find him. Here's how I catch him. Here's the deal. And then he just goes out and quite frankly dominates. So he's leading the Angler of the Year halfway through the year over on the Invitationals. And we touched on it a little bit before. Let's go to Florida for the Bassmaster Elite Series on the St. Johns River. talked a little bit with Patrick Walters about this last week going in, and he thought that the lack of practice would really impact the field. And really, if it wasn't for the 93 pounds, 6 ounces that Corey Johnston had, it would have been less than 20 pounds a day. It would have, I think, second place in that was Brad Watley, who had a 30 pound bag. It's a heck of a comeback from Brad Watley. He had like a 30 pound bag one of the days at Palatka to finish second with 72.4. But like I said, Corey Johnston gets his first Bassmaster Elite Series win, joining his brother Chris Johnston, who won in 2020. He becomes the third Canadian angler to win an Elite Series tournament, with Chris in 2020, Gussie in 2023, and Corey in 2024. Becomes the first Canadian angler to win an Elite Series tournament on all, largemouth as well, which is rather impressive. But there were a couple guys that I want to highlight in this Florida swing, because we always talk about the Florida swing. They started the year off on Toledo Bend and Lake Fork, and it turned the fishing world upside down. It was dominated by rookies, by guys out in the middle with jerk baits and minnows, and people said, oh my gosh, the tournament world is on its head. It's upside down. Look at these guys who normally catch them are at the bottom. Their careers are done. It's over. Stick a fork in them. Now we're going to Florida, where it's going to be dominated by the same guys since it's in April, which means that the fish aren't going to be 100% on the beds. It's still going to be dominated by that. But there are a couple guys that really, really did themselves a world of good. The first one is a big shout out to Brad Watley, who went back-to-back top 10s. He went 10th on Harris and second on the St. John's River, coming off, you know, he's a Texas guy, so he's familiar with Toledo Bend and Lake Fork, but he finished 89th and 84th there. So to bounce back with two top 10s, absolutely awesome Florida swing for Brad Watley. But then I started looking at the standings and the Angler of the Year standings, which Trey McKinney is still leading. And I said, by God, I said, Jason Christie had a good Florida swing. Christie starts out with a 73rd at Toledo Bend, a 68th at Lake Fork. Not good finishes for Jason Christie at all. Would not have wanted to be within 10 miles of that guy after that. Then he goes to the Classic on Grand, where there's a ton of pressure. He finishes 17th. So going into this Florida swing, very pivotal in Jason Christie's season. Off to a poor start. Obviously not the finish that he wanted at the Bassmaster Classic, but he goes 9th at the Harris Chain and 7th at the St. John's River. Not a big deal. Jason Christie back-to-back top 10s happens all the time. So I said, well, I don't think that Christie is like really known for his Florida finishes. So I went back and I ran the numbers from his BPT days, his FLW Tour days, and his Elite Series days. And he has 16 tournaments in Florida. Now, some of these include Lake Okeechobee, but there's a lot of Harris Chain in there. There's a lot of St. John's River. There's some Toho stuff in there, but it's Florida. I know the Florida people will be like, hey, they're all different. You live in Oklahoma, Florida's Florida. So he has 16 tournaments before these two back-to-back top 10s. He only has one top 10 finish out of those 16. And if you average all of his finishes over the course of his career in Florida, he averages a 55th place finish out of those 16 events in Florida. He has numerous finishes. He has a 99th, 138th, 122nd, an 88th, a 63rd, a 50th. So the fact that he was able to go in after less than stellar results, where he probably expected to smoke him on Toledo Bend and Lake Fork and the Classic, and then come back with a 9th and a 7th to jump back in to the top 30 in the Angler of the Year standings, a 7th at Harris, a 9th at Palatka. Really solid job for Jason Christie to get back on there. And then also the exact same thing can be said for Greg Hackney. It was kind of a what's going on with Hackney this year. You would expect him to have started off on those juggernaut fisheries. He goes 93rd at Toledo Bend, 39th at Lake Fork, bounces back in Florida, where he does have a lot of success with a 13th and a 6th to get back on track about the midway through his season. So some really cool stuff going on in the fishing world. As far as the rest of the week for BTL, on the 20, 5th, which is Thursday. I will be at registration for the Basscat Owners Tournament on Norfolk Lake. And then I am headed straight from there. We're going to do a live show that evening. So day 4 in the morning, and then a live show the evening of the 25th. And then I am headed to the 4th Bassmaster Open in Alabama, where hopefully the spotted bass will want to play. But stay tuned to basszone.com updated schedule on that. Let's get the music going here. There it is. And also a big shout out to Miles Berghoff for jumping on. Good to talk about some fishing with him and hear an update from his family. But that's all we got for today, April 22nd, 2024. We'll talk to everybody. Same place, same time tomorrow. Later.